So we're going to continue our journey into Tefillin and Kriyat Shema. We're going to dedicate this shiur in loving memory of Rabbi William Fortig. This is his third Yortzeit. This learning should be an aliyah for his neshama. Sometimes you want me to explain what that is and why it's so powerful. I'm happy to do that. So here's an interesting point before we get into this. Just to remind everybody, okay? We said, you hit that window. We said that the Marsha points out, okay, that there's a Gemara Nagarata in Brachos and Davav, and it says Hashem wears tefillin, and the Marsha wants to understand what that's about. And the Marsha says that when we bind tefillin to our arm, we're attempting to bind ourselves to Hashem. So we asked, how do you connect to Hashem? What does that even mean? So we asked, well, how do you connect to anybody? So we concluded one of the ways you connect to people is you figure out what it is they need of you, what they want of you, right? And when you do something for someone, which is really what they want, then they say, oh, this person really knows me, you become connected. Right? If I buy my wife a Black & Decker 3-speed drill for her birthday, it's not going to connect me to her, right? When I get some beautiful painting that's exactly her taste, and I know exactly what she wants, and I cook her favorite dish, which itself would be a nice neglect, right? So then we're connected. So how do we connect to Hashem? We figure out what Hashem wants of us. Now, Hashem doesn't need of us, but Hashem wants of us. So how do we know what Hashem wants of us? How do we know what Hashem wants of us, Nu? Torah. Because Hashem gave us a recipe. He says, this is what I want of you, Torah and Mitzvah. But we said, Torah and Mitzvah is so huge. How could you every morning think about the entire Torah? It's too much. So Hashem gives us a mini Torah, a recipe. And we put this inside our tefillin. And we bind it to our arms, which represents what we do. And we bind it to our heads, our foreheads, which represents what we think and feel. And we try to align ourselves in everything we do and everything we think with what it is Hashem wants of us. Those are the three questions we talked about in our tefillah class. What do I want?
Why do I want
it? Does Hashem want me to want it, right? The Gemara says, Asei Ritzono Ritzoncha. So then we said, okay, so it behooves us to study this recipe of what it is Hashem wants of us. Okay. So we talked a little bit about the Shema. Let's get deeper into this. We talked about the fact that it's interesting that our greatest line of faith is all about listening. You know, do we hear? Do we listen? Right? That listening isn't just listening. It's internalizing. It's understanding. It's considering. It's even obeying, etc., etc. Right? Kol asher tomar Sarah tishma b'kola. Whatever Sarah says, heed what she says. Right? Leman yishmu v'yirau. That they should internalize it and consider it. And everything else that we talked about in terms of Shema. Let me tell you two interesting things about tefillin, and then we're going to get into Ve'ahavta. Oh, and we talked about what it means, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Hashem Yudke Vavke, the word I can't pronounce. Why would you have a name of God you can't pronounce? Because it reminds me that Hashem is beyond my comprehension. Don't think you can really understand Hashem. Now that you know you can't understand Hashem, okay, you have to try to develop a relationship with Hashem. Elokim is the name of that's used in the Torah for a judge. It means that what I do matters. It's Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am your God, you the individual. It represents the fact that I can have a relationship with Hashem. But Yudke Vavke is that Hashem is beyond me. Hashem is both imminent and beyond me all at the same time. Okay? I have to combine those two things. All right? And that's all one. Hashem isn't sometimes merciful and sometimes just. Hashem's justice is mercy. Hashem's mercy is justice. This is a basic principle of Jewish faith. Now that we talked about that, now we can get to the next stage. What is Ve'ahavta? So I want to tell you just two quick things. First of all, when they were, the Gemara says that there used to be five tefillin. There used to be five chapters in the boxes that we have. Does anybody know that? It's Gemara. Gemara says there was the four chapters that we have, the four parashiyot tefillin. By the way, the tefillin is not the box. People think tefillin is the box and it holds the parchments. No, the parchments are the tefillin. We have a box that holds the tefillin. That's what the Rambam says. So even though we're going to use that word interchangeably, understand it's important to know what is what. So there were actually five tefillin. There was Shema, V'hayim Shema, V'ayaki Yaviyacha, Peter Rechem Chamor. Those are the four we know. And there was a fifth. Anybody know what the fifth was? This is interesting. Aseret HaDibrot. Ten Commandments. Ten Commandments. Okay? Aseret HaDibrot. Right? Why did they take this out of the tefillin? Which is a whole interesting discussion. What is it? L'moshe B'sina? Is it not? Whatever. Eight Lasot L'Hashem Eferu Torotecha. The rabbis allowed to undo. That's a whole interesting discussion. Not for now. Because People started to think that all you need is those 10 mitzvah. So the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, the men of the Great Assembly at the beginning of Beit Sheni, said we should stop saying these 10 commandments every day in our tefillah, which they used to do, and eventually they decided to take it out of the tefillah.
Pardon? Isn't there an obligation to say it every day?
there are some who have the minhag, but no, halachically you don't have to do it anymore, right? They used to do it every day. Anyway, so that's interesting because they found a pair of tefillin on Masada. When they were excavating Masada, they actually found a pair of tefillin. Yes, they found a pair of tefillin. Boxes, black straps, and five parshiot. And those five parshiot, the only difference between those tefillin and our tefillin, as best as we can assess, because it's 2,000 years old, so it's hard to know sort of what the dye would have changed something, whatever, but the conjecture, right? The only difference was that parsha. Now, what kills me the most about this discovery is that when they took it out, they didn't pay attention to whether Rashi or Rabbeinu Tam was right, which is just amazing, right? Like you have, did anybody know what the Machlokas Rashi Rabbeinu Tam is? This is a big deal. Chabad Nikim, where, right? So let's say that this is the parsha to these four fingers. So I have two in the middle, and I have two on the outside. So one opinion says that you have Shema and Vahayim Shema here, and the other two are on the outside. The other is, no, they appear in the order according to which they appear in the Torah, which really essentially means the only difference between two parashiyot. The whole difference in Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam is sort of where those individual portions sit on my head. That's the whole difference. And that's a big deal. Like, how you place something in life is a big deal. We can talk about that. But what's amazing to me is the tefillin we're talking about, this is not some concoction. There's a theory that came out of biblical archaeology that, you know, a group of individuals made this stuff up, and that they actually lived much, much later than the temple times, even in medieval period. Well, then you'd have a hard time explaining how you have tefillin in Bayit Shni. And again, my emunah, my relationship with Hashem, is not based on this stuff. It's just interesting stuff. Now comes the second idea, and this is worth thinking about. Just sort of to suggest, to give you an indication, there's a lot more to tefillin than meets the eye. Then we can get into what this recipe is and what this first parsha is. So, you know, we put our tefillin in a box. And that box has four sides, right? And it has a top. Now, the bottom you don't see, because the bottom is, there's a totafa, there's this wider box that's underneath that, but you know what I'm talking about, right? Okay? But under, if you take a look at a pair of tefillin, you have your own, so I'm not going to do this for you now. Does anybody know what's at the bottom of tefillin if you turn it upside down? What do you see? Square of stitches, right? How many stitches on each side, by the way?
Three
on each side, right? Now what's interesting, it's all about squares. Okay, you have four perfect squares, a square on top, a square of stitches, and it's all about squares. Okay, the inside of tefillin, when you get to internalizing tefillin, that's all about circles. For example, you take the tefillin. It would actually, I once talked to a friend of mine who was a sofer, a scribe. He said it would be so much easier to make tefillin if you could fold it into a neat little square. It would just be easier to stick in, a whole bunch of reasons. But you're not allowed to do that. If you do that, aside from the fact that it'll render the letters, it'll create a problem with the ink, the whole tefillin is puzzle. You might as well be wearing a cardboard box, right? It has to be rolled. By the way, not only does it have to be rolled, anybody else know anything else about the way it's rolled? God, if you want to sit here, because it's waiting for you. If you want. Right? Pardon? Has to be rolled. Imagine that this is the page of the tefillin. And this is the beginning, right? I read Hebrew from right to left. This is the beginning, this is the end. So if I roll it, I'm not paying attention, I roll it like this, so that when I open it up, I get to the end, puzzle. No good. The Pharisee in the Rambam. Clearly written in the Rambam. It has to be written and folded, it has to be rolled, right? So that you open it up to the beginning. Can anybody tell me why? That's a pretty obvious message. Because you should always be ready to learn Torah. It should always be open and ready for you. Okay? Okay. There are a lot of other interesting things, details about it, but I'll give you another example. Okay? When you take the tefillin, you wrap it around your arm. It's a circular motion. You put it on your head. It's a circle. It doesn't have to be a circle. It could have been a triangle. Circle. Tefillin is all about circles and squares. Now, what's the difference between a circle and a square? So Rav Arye Kaplan has a fascinating idea. He wrote an article, which, you know, somebody sort of figured out a way to get some more out of it and turned it into a book. How do you make an article a book? You print it in big letters and make it as many pages as you can. It looks like a book, right? But it's an article. It's in his anthology, but there's also a book published called Tefillin. It's a good name for that, right? And he has some fascinating ideas. I literally could give you three shiurim and just what he has to share. We're not going to do that today. But this idea is worth sharing. What's the difference between a circle and a square? Very simple. You don't find squares in nature. In fact, it's very rare. In fact, when they found Stonehenge, They instinctively understood that this was man-made because it was all squares. Right? Now, there are exceptions to this, but there's only two that I know, but that's not the point. Nature's full of circles. Okay? One second. Nature's full of circles.
No way this guy said
with me here. Okay? The earth is round. Tree trunks are round. The sun is round. Orbits are round. We're made up of round circles. Right? So the circle in Kabbalah represents nature. Hashem, by the way, Chet HaEgel in Kabbalah is also HaIgul. Atikri Egel Ele Igul. What is the perfect circle? Circle is the most perfect shape we have, even though we can't get it right. Everybody knows about pi and whatever else it is, right? But who's the ultimate circle? Hashem. Right? Now, square, right? A circle is all about nature. It's the world that we're given. The squares are what we choose to do with it. As we begin our day, and we think about the circle we've been given, and we contemplate the squares we're going to build, do we remember that we're part of a bigger circle? Right? You ever see The Lion King, right? The circle of life? That's what he's talking about. By the way, there is a fascinating piece by Rav Shimshon Ufal Hirsch. Rav Shimshon Ufal Hirsch asked the question, why do women not wear tefillin? Okay? Women were not obligated to wear tefillin. It's a big machlokas where the women could wear tefillin if they want to. Rashi's daughters or granddaughters, right? Could they take it off? Would they make a bracha? I'm not going to go down that. Tosfos says they can't because it's beged ish. What would happen, right? You can't. A woman is not supposed to wear men's clothing. What happens if all the women got together and started wearing it? Then 100 years from now, it wouldn't be beged ish. So that's a whole interesting discussion. But putting that aside, Rav Shimshon Ufal Hirsch says, because the woman internally has within her the great circle of life, she doesn't need the reminder that we need. That's a deep idea. So there's a lot going on symbolically. And by the way, those squares are so important. If you're running out of the room in a hurry, and you bang your tefillin against the door, and you round off one of the quarters of your tefillin's bustle. You have to go get it fixed. And if you have something like this, by the way, if you look at your tefillin, you see there's a corner around it, you should take it to a sofer, because you need to, you know, you don't want to have weird things happen to you, right? Have that discussion. Right? So now that we said that, let's talk about the recipe inside this tefillin. What is it that I'm supposed to be thinking about? So we talked about Shema, let's talk about Ve'ahavta. Okay. Ve'ahavta at Hashem Elokecha. What do you think that means? Again, Hashem Elokecha. Whatever we're going to talk about now is Hashem, that Hashem is beyond me, and Elokim, that I have a personal relationship with Hashem. There are people who go through life, God is like this idea. They makes sense to them that there's a God. Hard to disagree when you look at the world. You know, in order to say Hashem doesn't exist, you have to say the whole world is random. Avraham Wasserman points out in his Kovetz Maamarim, that would be ridiculous. Every human being is born with an intuitive understanding that there's a creator, unless something comes and gets in the way of that, right? Which we could talk about if you want. But Hashem is beyond me. You can't let Hashem only be in the beyond. So Elokecha, right? Your God. Now this is interesting, right? Zevi Lawrence, your God is a little bit different from my God. Why? Because he's the way you see Hashem. How could two people ever see anything exactly the same way? It can't be exactly the same way. So you've got to find your relationship with Hashem, but there's a danger to finding your relationship with Hashem. You find your relationship with Hashem. It's like, you know, when I first got to Gush, I didn't have a relationship with Avraham Wasserman. My relationship with him was once a week he gave a shir kol, and I tried to pay attention, see if I could follow it, but I never raised with him. I didn't think he knew who I was. Turned out he did, but I didn't know that. Right? I was just in awe of him. So, on the one hand, there was a value to that awe, to be overwhelmed by the complexity of his intellect, to try to follow the flowchart that he would lay out in front of everybody for 2 hours on a difficult sugya, and realize it was totally beyond me. There was a value to that, but I lost something, because I didn't have a close relationship with him. So eventually, years later, I started to develop a close relationship with him. That took a lot of work. I had to remember, I'm still, just because finally I got to the stage where Lichtenstein can share a story with me about his youth, or we can chuckle together, whatever it is, you know, I still got to remember I was sitting next to Lichtenstein. How do you find that balance? Okay, so what do you do with that balance, that Hashem Elokim? V'yahavta at Hashem Elokecha. What does that mean, V'yahavta? Now that we've been talking for a while, so normally, if it was your first day of a writer, I'd say, okay, what does it mean? You'd say, oh, it means to love God. I'd say, what? How do you love God? And then we'd see we have to define love. But we did this already. What's love all about? Love is all about giving. Right? As opposed to lust, which is all about taking. Okay? That's why when you love someone, they're a partner. And when you lust someone, they're an object. That's why lust wanes and love grows. When someone lusts someone, he's not interested in the person. What's he interested in? Himself. I have some physical desire. I want to satisfy that. It has nothing to do with the other person. Right? Okay? When you love someone, it's very much about the other person. So, ve'ahavta at Hashem Elokecha la'vi, to give, to bring, means I just want to fill myself up with a desire to give back to Hashem, to give to Hashem. Now, let's talk about this for a minute. How would you do that? How would you do that? So, Gav Buchwald wakes up in the morning, he says, okay, ve'ahavta at Hashem, let me take a pause. What do you do with that idea? It's a nice idea. Like, you know, you're now ahead of guys in another yeshiva who never talked about this because you can say this. It doesn't mean you understand it. So, what do you do with that? What do you think?
Just try to serve God in the best way you can.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, do the best way.
Pardon?
That's fine.
Okay. If I have an obligation, an imperative, to give to Hashem, what do I obviously have to ask myself?
How do I give to
Hashem? How do I do that? What is it I think Hashem wants of me? Now, let's say that this parsha is in the mezuzah, it's in the tefillin. It's one of the few things we're obligated to say three and possibly four times a day if you say Kriya Shema Lamita, which I do, right? So this is a message that's not supposed to be like, you know, once a year on Pesach we remember we got out of Egypt. This is supposed to be with us all the time. Whenever you get something that's repeated that often, it means really you should be thinking about this all the time, but we can't obligate a person to think about this all the time, so at least let's do this. Okay, now this makes sense to me. This is exactly what we've been talking about in everything that I do. Is this what Hashem wants of me? Now, by the way, there are different levels in this. You get a person who says, okay, there's a mitzvah, I'm supposed to do it, I just do it. Doesn't think about why he's doing it. Okay, technically he fulfills the mitzvah. The mitzvah clearly does not fulfill him, but okay. Then you get a person who's struggling with this question, right? He knows that there has to be more to it, so he wants to understand the mitzvah he's doing, right? So he's struggling with what Hashem wants of him. Then there's a person who is so filled with this idea that he yearns to do that which Hashem wants of him or her. In Hilchos Tshuva, in the 10th chapter, you ready for this? Shulman, you ready? This is it. You're back, right? Caleb, you ready? This is big. This is big. You ready? I know you're ready. Right? So you're in this moment. At any point in your day, the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva says, in Perek Yud, there are 10 chapters. There's a custom to learn them. This is what I do. All 10 chapters during Aseret Yemei Teshuva, each day a different chapter. So the first day of Rosh Hashanah, you learn the first parak. You can cheat by doing it at night, whatever, right? So what's the 10th chapter of Hilchos Teshuva? It's a short chapter. It's Yom Kippur. And what does the Rambam say in the 10th chapter of Yom Kippur? He says a person's relationship with Hashem should be like someone who's lovesick. Now what does it mean to be lovesick? It's not a bad sickness. You meet someone. You know, I remember when I met my wife. Okay? She wasn't my wife then. I was smitten. You know what it means to be smitten? You can't think about it. I was in the middle of studying for a smicha test. Smicha went out the window. I was just like, okay, I ended up I couldn't take the test in Av that year because like I just got distracted type of thing. So I took it a little later, I took it to Sukkos, right? If I'm not mistaken. You know. Next 3 days until she went to this Knesset program, she was like working in Kfar Etzion. I mysteriously found all sorts of reasons to get over to Kfar Etzion. I was supposed to be majoring in Hilchos, I think it was Hilchos Shabbos. I was majoring in Hilchos Dorita, right? And even when you're not with her, you're thinking about her. And what's the biggest question you have? Like, what can I do to make this person happy? What does this person want of me? And if I could figure out, I don't know, she plays guitar, great, I'm going to find some guitar music, tell her I have some guitar music. Not because that morning I woke up and said, I want to look for some guitar music, because I want to find what she wants me to find, because that's all you want to do, you want to give it to somebody. Right? This becomes even stronger when you're a parent. You so want to give to your children what you know they want to have. And you know that there are things that they want that they don't know they want. Like your grandchild comes over and he wants a treat, but you know the treat isn't good for him. What you really want to give him is a meaningful life. So you don't give him the treat. It's very good. So what are you doing? What should I be giving? What should I... That's ve'ahavta. Ve'ahavta is, what does Hashem want of me? How can I give back to Hashem? So let's say, for example, I don't know, you walk into the Beis Medrash and you have a meeting. I don't know, some donor, you know, sort of called you up yesterday and said, listen, I'd really like to help a writer. Can we talk tomorrow morning? And it's 10 o'clock in the morning. You say, sure, you know, I finished Rambam Shir or whatever it is, and Thursday morning I'm going to, you know, have a Zoom with you on a Chavesnish, right? And I'm walking through this Spanish, and I see, you know, Yerachmiel Zev, you know, whichever student, right? I don't think we have Yerachmiel, so we could use that name, right? And he's sitting in the Spanish, and he looks like the world caved down in front of him. He looks like, you know, so I walk by the Spanish, I say, what's going on? He said, I just found out my grandfather's really sick. Nebuch. So what are the odds that I'm walking through, and the boy who's struggling happens to be there, and I happen to see him, and in that moment, Hashem obviously put this boy here. But he put that guy up there waiting for me on the phone. So what does Hashem want of me? I just want to be in a state of ve'ahavta. I want to give what Hashem wants me to give. If I think that this is what I'm meant to give, because this is what I think Hashem wants me. By the way, you get it wrong. You get it wrong. But the value of that question, of that struggle, changes the nature of your life. So that's ve'ahavta. Ve'ahavta at Hashem Elokecha. Know that you are put here for greater things than just having a hamburger. And if you walked by Burger's Bar, and some guy's walking out, he says, you know, I just ordered burgers, and I was going to go back in, because they gave me three, and I was only supposed to have two, I can't have two, do you want a burger? And you look at it, it's sealed, it's safe, it's healthy, maybe it's, I don't know, you know, the Epstein or Rebbe who's coming out, so you trust him. Hashem decided to give you a hamburger. What an unbelievable thing. Why did Hashem decide to give you a hamburger? How do you serve Hashem with this hamburger? So you figure, you know what, this is great. Because Hashem's going to give me this hamburger, I'm going to eat this, I'm going to have so much energy, I'm going to go to the basement. And you have the hamburger, you take it to the basement. You know what, if Hashem gave me a hamburger, I'm going to go sit in the basement, eat the hamburger, and learn some Tzvas Emes. And you're walking there, and there's a guy. And he's got his hands out. And he looks so sad, and he looks so broken. He's like one of the beggars of Yerushalayim. And you just keep walking. You eat the hamburger, now you're benching, you say, maybe I should have given this to him. You missed it. But what if you're walking by that guy and you suddenly realize, you know, for me it's just a hamburger. I wasn't expecting this hamburger. Maybe Hashem gave me this hamburger so I could give this hamburger to this fellow. How would you even have that thought process? Because you're in the ve'ahavta zone. You're not about what can I get, you're about what can I give. Understand? Now, how do you do that? There are actually three ways that you do that. Let's talk about what those three ways are. You got a question, Snowball?
Yeah.
Rafi?
At what point do you draw the line of, like, Hashem put this water all in front of me? What is this teaching?
It's a very good question. It's a very good question. I will tell you, this is an opinion. It's a very good question. How do you know where to draw the line? Like, you know, wow, this page is folded to the left. It means that I should be moving left in my politics. Like, what does that mean, right? So I'll tell you what I've concluded, although there is no perfect answer to this question. This is Chassidus par excellence. Ask yourself, if I'm working on the big issues, and I'm still struggling with what degree I should have, whether this is a girl I want to marry, then whether the pen is faced this way or this way, it might carry a message, but that's not what you need to work on right now. Everything carries a message, right? Everything. There's a pile of books there. What's the one on top? Maybe we're supposed to see that safer is hidden from us for a reason. I don't know. Everything carries a message. We're not capable of drawing in all the messages. You know, it's like a radio. It's like a radio. You could spend all day flipping the radio frequency. Remember the old radios where they used to have a dial? So let's say you turn in the dial because you want to exercise your fingers.
Right.
And you get, like, you know, 106.9, 106.7, 106.6. And everyone's there. One's a talk show, one's a radio show, one's a music show. And they're all there. They're there. They're all there. But you got to pick one. Because if you try to get them all, you'll hear them all, but you won't hear any of them. It'll just be one big gibberish. So it's the same thing. Maybe at Tzaddik is on a level where he can get all these messages at the same time. I don't know about you guys, but I'm not there yet. So I pick one at a time. Right? One at a time. This is a constant thing you do.
So how connect is the message?
And go from the big to the little. Work on the big things first. You know, what am I meant to get out of this year? That's a big thing. Should I be going to college or not? You know my opinion. I think college is a good thing. You should. Should you be going to a secular college or YU or staying in Israel forever and going to IDC or going to Bar Ilan? That's a big question. Everybody has to choose, figure out. Be sure that whatever you decide, you're deciding it for the right reasons. If you're going back to college in America, and it's a secular college, but you're going there because you'll be near your grandparents and they're not well, and you really feel it's a huge mitzvah to be with them, so then you have to offset the other challenges you're going to have there. But maybe that's the right decision. I don't know. If you're going back to the college because you think the babes are nice there, then I don't think that's the right reason to go to college. Do you understand? So those three questions, what do I want, why do I want it, does Hashem want me to want it, that will inform your ability to make those decisions. Yeah.
Can this become a dangerous mentality? Because then you stop looking at people as people and you start looking at them as objects to bring yourself closer to God.
You know what a malach is? We find the concept of malach. So you'll say angels. What's an angel? Okay, so what does that mean? So, I'll give you the short version because it'll be the answer to your question, right? Chazal tell us that angels have no free choice. An angel can't choose, right? The Chazal tell us that there were three angels that came to see Avraham. Remember this? Why were there three angels? Because there were three different missions. Okay, one of them was there to destroy Sdom. One of them was there to save Lot. And one of them was there to tell Avram that he's going to have a son in him. Right? Three different... So the obvious question is, why don't you get one guy? I can multitask. You know, go to Avram and say, you're going to have a son in a year. I'm off to destroy Sdom, but don't worry, I'm going to save Lot before him. Take me 90 seconds. I'm a malach. Boom. So Chazal said, no, each malach has its mission. So we know that a malach, whatever a malach is, has a mission, can't deviate from that mission. Can't choose not to do that mission. Okay? Has no free choice. Doesn't grow spiritually like we do. There's a lot more, but let's stop there. So Rav Kook suggests you could say that a force of nature is a malach. Hashem created the wind. And the wind has a mission. The wind can't wake up one day and say, this is so boring. I want to make somebody wet. I'm going to try to be rain. You're not rain, you're wind. Right? Lightning can't wake up one day and say, you know, this is so destructive. I want to be a butterfly. You're not a butterfly, you're a... Everything has its mission. Now, sometimes a human being can be a malach and not even realize he's a malach. Like when Yosef is looking for his brothers and he can't find his brothers, and Vayimtzeihu Ish, and some guy finds him. Right? Remember this story? Some guy finds him, and Yosef says, I'm looking for my brothers. And this guy says, oh, yeah, Shamar Shamati, I heard there were some boys, they were talking. They went to Dotan. Remember, we once talked about this on a Thursday night. Right, this guy. I don't think this guy had any idea who Yosef was. I'm not even sure that this guy knew who he was. He passed by some schnook looking for his brothers. He said, "Oh yeah, he's the guy who's walking through and he's looking for the kotel." And you're like, "Oh, down that way." Okay. Guy one morning walks into the Rovers and looking for a minion. You send him to the Ramban shop. What if he goes to the Ramban? And he starts talking to the guy next to him. The guy next to him is a wonderful guy. And then he realizes this fellow who you just gave directions to had no place to go for Shabbos. He invites him there for Shabbos. And then he goes there for Shabbos and he meets the guy's daughter. And the next thing you know, 6 months later, they're married. Now they have a kid. And the kid grows up to be one of the Gedolei Ador. You were a malach for that Gedolei Ador. He has no idea you exist. You have no idea who he exists. In that moment... You were meant to do something, and you had no choice. You had no choice not to do it, to do it. That's just where Hashem put you. Right? So if it's true for human beings, it's certainly true for everything else. Now, if you try to analyze all the malachim in the world all at the same time, you'll go nuts. So it's like everything else. Pick one. Multitasking is an illusion. It does not exist. Yes, Galva already.
But you do have the choice. Like, if someone's asking to go to Kota on a bad mood that day, you have the choice to just blow them off and then... He's not getting married in this Gedolei Ador.
Do you have a choice? That's interesting. In the moment, you're, 1 second. It's an excellent question. Everybody understand this question? But you do have a choice. What does that mean, you have no choice? In that moment, you think you have a choice. And you're meant to look at life as though you do have a choice. But in retrospect, looking back with hindsight, you had no choice. How do I know you have no choice? Because it happened. And if Hashem runs the world, it was always meant to happen.
So I have no choice in anything.
Aha! Exactly right, except for one thing. What do you have a choice in? What's the only choice you have? Pardon? Kol bidei shamayim, chutz min yirat shamayim. Everything is in the hands of heaven. This is more, except yirat shamayim. What is yirat shamayim? Let's say, I'm oversimplifying, let's say yirah, even though the root is yarei, let's say it's related to ra'ah, and it's about how I choose to see the world. Let's say I tell you right now, you know what, I don't know, look at Boaz, he's so clean shaven. You need a shave. Get out of here until you get a shave. Let's say I said that. It doesn't personally bother me that you're looking stark, but let's say he did, right? And let's say I yell at you and I scream at you and I tell you to go to shave. Okay. So it was meant to be that I was meant to stuff you for not being shaved. Okay. Now you have only one choice. You are either gonna shave or not gonna shave. For all I know, you're gonna blow up and start throwing books at me. I have no answer. Okay? And if that happens, I will look back at that and say, wow, isn't that interesting? Hashem planned for me to have a book. Like, I've never had a boy throw a book at me. If a boy threw a book at me, I'd take a pause and say, what's Hashem want to me? You have one choice. You choose to decide how to look at that. Do I learn from it or do I not? And we are held accountable. Not for what we do. We're held accountable for what we want to do. And by the way, therefore, conversely, if I want to do something, okay, and I don't succeed for reasons out of my control, what does the Gemara say? Anus rachmana patre. If the only reason you didn't get dominion on time was because there was an explosion and the street blew up, then it's as though you went dominion because you wanted to go dominion.
Okay.
Understand? Yeah.
Yeah. There's two things that I struggle with that. Like, one, how I look at it influences how I act. So, like, in that situation where you, and I freak out, my reaction, like, I look at it and I freak out and I start throwing stuff at you, but the action is what Hashem wanted, but I only did that action because that's how I looked at it. So either way, that is what Hashem wanted.
Let me ask you a question.
Also, if the point is that I don't have free will because it's what Hashem wanted, the way that I look at it could definitely still be how Hashem wants it, because that impacts all my actions. Like, this life
that's right.
that you embrace, which is awesome, influences a lot of things that you do or how you live your life, but then you don't have a choice in that. That's what Hashem would want.
So the way I look at this is twofold. An excellent question. Galba Rebbe getting stark. Okay? Excellent question. First, when it's somewhat of a conundrum, maybe you would call it a paradox, that on the one hand, Hashem knows everything's going to happen, and yet we're held accountable for our actions. One of the conclusions that you draw when you study this stuff is that across the board, all of Chazal, all the rabbis, all the traditional Jews, they all agree we're accountable for our actions. And yet Hashem knows what we're going to do. So how can you be accountable for your actions? So one way to look at that is, you're right, it's a conundrum. Right? You can't understand that. It's like asking that famous question, can Hashem create a rock that he cannot lift? Right? On the one hand, if Hashem cannot create a rock that he cannot lift, then how great is Hashem? I could create a rock that I cannot lift. Right? On the other hand, if Hashem can create a rock that he cannot lift, then how great is Hashem? There's a rock he cannot lift. So the answer that most spoke to me was brought up by a German philosopher in the 60s, which wasn't even a Jewish guy. He said, oh, this is very simple. He says, obviously God can create a rock that he cannot lift. God can do everything. And then he can lift it. That makes no sense. Welcome to the world of God. You're trying to put God in a box, but the definition of Hashem is that Hashem is the source of reality, creator of present, past, now. How do we understand that Hashem? This is Yud Kevav.
I'm not showing you the free will.
No, 1 second. This is Yud Kevav. So that's one issue. One issue is somehow, even though everything that's going to happen is meant to be, I'm held accountable. Even if it makes no sense to me, the fact that I know I'm held accountable is enough for me to say, before I do something, it's up to me. Number two, once I've done something, you know, I don't know, we mentioned this morning, right? The famous Thursday night Spider-Man moment, right? And then, or whatever night of the week it was, Wednesday night, right? So Thursday, I had a serious schmooze with you guys, whatever. Don't kid yourself into thinking that I'm sitting down Friday morning and struggling with whether I did the right thing. Did I do the right thing? Like, what if some guy was so offended by what I said that it threw him into a depression? God forbid. What if a guy decided to leave Egypt? Maybe I'm wrong. So that doesn't mean, like, that speech was meant, you were all meant to go to the movie. I was meant to yell at you. Whatever we were meant to do, however we did it, I was meant to fake it, whatever we did, right? But that doesn't absolve me from struggling with my ratzon, with the fact that in that moment, I believed that was what I wanted to do. And sometimes you find out that you had a ratzon, you had a desire that was incorrect. How do you find that out? Because something happens that wasn't what you wanted to happen. So you have to align yourself with Hashem's will some more.
My issue is not like whether or not it's free will. My issue is I just don't see the distinction between your outlook and the action. Like, why we can say that the action, Hashem knows it's always going to happen. The only thing you do have free will is...
Oh, very simple, very simple. If God runs the world, Okay, if Hashem created us, Hashem knows. If we accept the Jewish perception of God, which is that God knows the future, in fact, God's already in the future, right? He's beyond time. We can't even understand that. We can say it, right? So then whatever you're going to do, Hashem knows, right? Let's say a guy is, I don't know, he's debating whether to come to a raita. Where's Moshe Metz? Moshe Metz, best notice of coming to a raita ever in the history of a raita. You have to ask him to show you the video. Hysterical video, right? So they had this whole thing. They want to come to a raita. So they're struggling. Do we come to a raita? Do we not? The Columbus Stooges, are they three Stooges? They're all going to come, right? Okay. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew before he was born that he was going to be at a raita. He thinks he chose to go to a raita. So what is this hashkafa? By the way, not everybody agrees with this. I'm just sharing with you my perception. You don't have to agree with this, right? Looking back, he was always meant to go to a raita. How do I know that? Because he came. But that doesn't mean that he's not accountable for the fact that he wanted to do that and decided to do that. Now, why sometimes Hashem sort of does exactly what we want to do, and sometimes Hashem doesn't do what we want to do, that's a mystery that only HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows, and we got to struggle with that and learn from it. Yes?
I'm just missing something here. Like, if I'm
just one thing?
I'm missing something here. If I do something that's considered a chet, that's over, right?
If you do something that's considered a chet, mistake,
yes.
Right?
Whatever it is.
Right.
I can just justify it to myself and say, well, everything goes according to God's plan. It's sort of like a very pantheistic idea.
No. So let's think about this. Was it God's plan for you? Let's say you do it. Let's make this more practical.
Okay.
Let's say that you walk into the Beis Medrash with a cheeseburger.
Okay.
And you eat a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
And there are three possibilities here. One is, you like cheeseburgers and you could care less what the yeshiva thinks about it. And, you know, you're going to keep 612. What's a 613? That's not fine. Okay. The other possibility is, you didn't know it was a cheeseburger. Third possibility is, you know a cheeseburger is wrong, you feel terrible, but you couldn't resist. In all those three moments, you're eating a cheeseburger. So now, the next day, they bring you before a tribunal. Me, Rabbi Aaron, Rav Noam, you know, we're going to have the cheeseburger discussion, right? How do I walk into a discussion like that? I don't walk into a discussion like that saying, you evil boy, you ate a cheeseburger. That's not how I look at the world. In fact, if I thought that, I wouldn't talk to you. How do I look at the discussion? Why did Hashem put this boy in this moment, in this place, for us to have a cheeseburger discussion? He was meant to eat this cheeseburger. Now, what are we going to learn from this? How's he going to fix this? His issue is not that he ate a cheeseburger. Because if Hashem wanted him to eat a cheeseburger, he would have eaten a cheeseburger whether we wanted to or not. If you walk into a room and you accidentally turn a light on, Hashem meant for you to accidentally turn a light on. You didn't think about it. Why are you held accountable? Because if you could accidentally turn a light on, something's wrong. I've never accidentally ate a cheeseburger. So if I accidentally ate a cheeseburger, something would be wrong. That being said, you know, there could be a lot of reasons. Personally, I accidentally eat a treif. I'll tell you a great story. We were in Prague, because we haven't had a story, right? This year. Ooh, we got to finish in a minute. We got to finish now. Wow. So we'll finish with the story, okay? So can somebody take that down after Shir and we'll get a new battery?
I can fix it once
before. Dude, middle of the story. So it was my wife's birthday and wanted to do something special, 50th birthday, so we're going to do. She always wanted to go to Prague. I said, you know what? This is great. I'm lucky. My wife's a cheap date. It costs nothing to go to Prague. It's not expensive to be there. And you could do stuff on Shabbos. So we went for a weekend to Prague. Great. Fascinating. And it's the perfect thing to do for her because it's something I enjoy doing. I'm going to go get to the Shul of the Maharal. It's unbelievable, right? So before we go, somebody that we're close to says to us, oh, you got to go check this great restaurant. It's like Mahadran, right? It's Mahadran. Did I tell you the story, right? It's Mahadran.
I don't know.
And like, you got to check out the store. It's an amazing restaurant. Order a place. Okay, so we order a place. We're going to go there Friday night dinner. We have a tour guide. Tour guide's a rabbi. He's not even an Orthodox rabbi. He calls himself a conservative rabbi, but he's from. That's another discussion. And we happen to be talking, and he, you know, happens to mention where you go. He goes, you can't go for dinner. It's treif. I said, what do you mean it's treif? It's like Mahadran. He goes, no, in Prague, they don't have to, they're allowed to call themselves kosher, even if they're not. How they know this, how they prove this, whatever it is. So this friend of mine went to this restaurant. He's a frum guy, and he had mama's treif food. It was cooked on Shabbos. It was, I mean, the whole nine yards. So he's an anus. But it's a show gig. But one second. So now he has, of course I told him. So now he has to figure out, wow, Hashem put me in a situation where I accidentally ate treif. I got to think about that. I don't have to think about that. Why? Because Hashem put me in a situation where I didn't accidentally eat treif. Both of us have something to learn.
He didn't do his due diligence to figure out if it was treif or not.
We can talk about that till we're blue in the face. That's not my point. My point is what was meant to happen, happened. That doesn't mean we're done. It means what did we want? What are we meant to learn from it? What does Hashem want of us? That's a constant journey. And you got to be careful. You got to pick the issues you can deal with and put aside the ones you can't. Now, all of this is ve'ahavta. Now we're up to, so how do you do that? So there are three ways in which we do that, right? B'chol levavcha, Chol nafshecha b'chol modecha. We will get to that next class in Mitzvah Hashem. Food for thought, Rabbi Zay. Shkayach.